Rafer.
Hey, Kristen.
I have an important question to ask you today.
I love your important questions.
It's actually kind of a dumb question. My question is, what is money? How does it work? And how do you explain this to, for example, your own kids or me? Because I don't understand it. How does money work?
You have mistaken me for Tim Geithner, who I am not. It's a fascinating question to me. I've never quite understood it. I've always understood the convenience aspect of money, like the idea of, hey, instead of carrying around 6 pounds of gold in your pocket, why don't you just have this light piece of paper that represents the gold?
But how do we decide that paper is valuable? And what does that have to do with gold? Why did we decide gold? What is the gold standard?
The gold part has always confused me, because that has always confused me, especially if you think back to the olden days when I think we were so much closer to kind of the law of the jungle and a little further away from having this nice on-the-grid civilization that we have now. You know, I mean, back then, I mean, the chances of you getting stuck out in the desert or, you know, whatever were pretty high. And what good is gold going to do you?
Why not? I want some penicillin.
Right.
I don't care about, like, I can make a necklace out of
it.
Yeah. I don't care about this. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking today is because we just saw a movie in which something stands in for money.
Right.
Time is money.
Time is money. One of many puns you will hear in Time, right?
The new movie starring Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried.
Right.
But before we talk about In Time, let's introduce ourselves. This is Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And this is Ray Kirkus. This is Movie
Money. And why don't you give everybody an explanation of how this movie kind of uses time as money and the whole plot and such?
Right. Okay. So basically, we are in the future, as we always are, in the future where the world has been split into the haves and the have-nots. Instead of living, I think, in cities, people live in time zones. Some time zones are poorer. Some are richer. Justin Timberlake plays Will Salas. He lives in the ghetto time zone of Dayton. In this movie, time, how does it work? I think at 25, you are programmed to die, right?
Yes.
But you keep, what happens is you work for more time. So, you know, you do some factory work, you know, you sell some things that you have and you, you know, gain a few minutes, gain an hour here and there.
But you never age.
But
you
never
still
age,
look 25.
Right, which is good for the casting department because it lets you cast a lot of nice, you know, attractive-looking people. So Justin Timberlake is Will Salas, and he's kind of scraping together a living for himself and his 50-year-old mother, played by Olivia Wilde, which is a very funny part of the film, I thought. Meets a rich, quote-unquote, rich guy who has a century on his clock. The clocks are little green LEDs imprinted on your arm that count down the seconds. This guy has a century on his clock. He bequeaths that time to Will and then dies. And then Will is essentially suspected of the murder. And now he has to that part gets a little fuzzy. Now he has to, A, hide from the cops, the timekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
But also he wants to bring down the system. So he has to do that too. And that's how he meets Amanda Seyfried, who is the rich, spoiled daughter of what would you call him? A minute magnate. A guy who owns all the time in the world, basically, Philippe Weiss.
Yes. And she and her inheritance must have, I don't know, millions of years.
Will does ask her at some point, so how much is your dad worth? And she says, eons. So there you go. So it's a very, very literal, you know, very literal one-to-one, you know, analogy between time and money.
Yeah, and the poor people literally are living day to day.
Literally living day to day.
Yeah.
Right, which I have to say, I think were some of the better scenes in the movie, I think, come in the beginning when you're watching these people try to scrape together a living. And like, you know, with only a few seconds left to their next, you know, quote unquote meal, the next place where they can get a little more time, you know, you miss the bus, And then now your clock is counting down. You know, mm-hmm. how are you going to get home? How are you going to get to where someone can give you a few extra minutes? It's
they're all very good at running.
Yes, they're all. Yes.
Because they're always out of time. So
right, exactly.
They are fit. They are disgruntled. They're hungry.
Yes. Lean. Yes, and, lean, mean.
And it seems all the time that the bus fare is being raised to, instead of paying for 1 hour, you have to pay 2 hours to ride
yes.
the bus. You have to, you know, and so a lot of inequity, all, you know, a very... obvious metaphor for money.
Yes, for money and
economy and so on.
A little Wall Street rage, I think, thrown in there, right?
Plenty of it.
The big guys, you know, sticking it to the little guys as always, and the little guys trying to rise up and take back, you know, what they feel is theirs. Yeah, a lot of that stuff is in there.
And yet, important lessons in that the most important things we need to do, we do have to do today.
That's correct. That's correct.
That's where your heart's supposed to melt a little bit when you realize that. Yes. Did you feel that the money was a good metaphor or the time was a good metaphor for money in this movie?
I will say that I thought in its own way it was really like verging on brilliant. I think the way that it drove home phrases which people use like cost of living. Really kind of make you think, you know, and it makes you realize this idea that the rich can live forever while the poor have a much more limited lifespan is in some ways essentially true, right? I mean, money does buy you a longer life. It does buy you better health. It buys you all these luxuries that enable you to live longer and enjoy your life more, while the poor, they do have a shorter life expectancy. You know, all these things are true today, and making it at the point where, like you were saying, you know, the guy goes to get a cup of coffee and he says, 4 minutes for a cup of coffee. Yesterday it was three, you know. And the guy says, do you want some coffee or do you want to reminisce? You know, and it's, you know, it's very funny, and it really it gets the gears going in your head. One of my favorite lines is when the streetwalker approaches the cop, right, and she says, hey, you know, something like, you know, I'll give you a tumble for 10 minutes. And I kind of thought, but wouldn't it take 15? That's not a good deal, lady.
I think she actually said, "I'll give you 10 minutes of fun for an hour."
For an hour? Oh, is that what she says?
I think that's what she says.
Okay,
which I thought was great.
That is very funny.
Yeah, I'll
that
give you 10 funny. Minutes for an hour.
An hour? That's not bad.
Yeah.
So, well, there you go. But little things like that, I thought really made me think and really drove home this connection between money and time and quality of life, you know.
Well, do you think time is as good a metaphor as, let's say, for example, water? Like in Waterworld, one of the greatest movies of a new weird economy?
I'm going to have to just – I defer to you on that, Kristen, because I have not seen Waterworld. If you say it's the greatest, I just have to believe you.
Well, drinking water is a huge commodity. The whole world, I think the ice caps have melted. Everyone's living on these kind of boat island
things.
Yeah,
these sort of floating shack island looking things, as I recall,
exactly,
in the trailers.
Yeah, exactly.
And right.
I've always been told that that was the closest to becoming a reality someday, that water will be our greatest commodity at one point.
Right.
We won't give a damn about some gold or anything else down the road.
Right.
It'll be, you know, we won't be able to stay alive if we don't have our water. So
well,
I always like the premise of Waterworld. I'm not saying it's a great movie.
Okay.
Well, maybe if, you know, you have nothing else to do on a Saturday afternoon and you have some friends over and a couple of cocktails, maybe it is the best movie ever.
Isn't it like 2.5 hours long or something?
Yeah. It'll take you all Saturday to watch it.
Well, I mean, it does. It's true. Water does make perfect sense as a commodity, right?
Because don't you want it to be the most valuable thing there is?
Right. And you obviously quite clearly need it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, things like that, you know. The other one I was thinking of, you and I were talking about this, post-apocalypse movies, always winds up being a commodity. And my favorite one was Road Warrior, where gasoline is the commodity.
That's so close to real life now, too.
And that's very close to real life, too. Yes,
let's
exactly.
Let's just kill everybody over it.
Right, exactly. People practically did in the 70s with those, you know, the odd and even license plate days and the long lines at the gas stations. I mean,
I have something to tell you, Rafer.
Yeah.
We're still killing each other for gasoline.
Okay,
let's not get into it.
Yeah, let's not go there, Kristen.
But another commodity that I think is great, Handmaid's Tale, there are only a few people left on the planet who are able to reproduce.
And, right.
The ability to reproduce becomes its own commodity so that women who actually have functioning reproductive systems are kind of like traded, and much like money. It's like,
right.
I will give you this woman so that you can, you know.
Right.
And because doesn't the next generation have its own value in a way where it becomes the greatest commodity there is?
Sure. And once again, as with all good science fiction, it's pretty much just a reflection of the reality today, right? I mean, people, you know, fertility is a problem. People do have kids later and later. You know, women hit late 30s and 40 and are unable to have children, and you will pay out the nose for money, you know, for procedures that will allow you to have a baby. I mean, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. Adoptions. I mean, adoptions are wildly expensive.
They're hugely expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that stuff is real.
Even back when I was adopted, I think my parents paid thousands and thousands of dollars.
Is that right?
That was back in the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not cheap. It's not
right.
cheap. So did you think that In Time was a good movie? Let's go back to the In Time, Justin Timberlake. Let's go back to Amanda Seyfried and Time is Money and all this stuff. Did you like the movie?
Okay. The director, Andrew Niccol, and producer, is the same guy who did Gattaca. Essentially the same movie, you know, only in Gattaca, it was eugenics and like genetic engineering that was the source of the social inequity.
Mm-hmm.
That movie I liked quite a bit. It's a little on the somber side, but I thought that movie was stylish and moody and like and serious and very well thought out. You know, the details were all really airtight. In Time is pretty sloppily conceived, you know. There are a lot of sort of really large logical holes in the movie just from start to finish. I mean, the idea that someone could simply come up to you, press his arm against your arm, and steal a bunch of your minutes just seemed like pretty faulty technology for the future. Like, I just kind of thought,
to be a security code?
There's no – well, right. I mean, you know, I mean, at one point – I don't think I'm really spoiling anything here because it's in the trailer. At one point, you know, Justin Timberlake just drives an armored truck into a time bank where there is a vault containing, you know, what, hundreds of thousands of years. And there's no guards anywhere. there's not a single guard around. And I just kind of thought, really? You've hidden all that – That valuable a commodity you've hidden behind plate glass that you can just drive a truck into? Why didn't someone think of that before stupid Justin Timberlake did? A lot there. And I know these are small kind of nitpicky things, but they add up. And they really – they start to make the film feel a little silly.
Hmm.
How about you?
Well, you thought it was silly?
I did. I thought it was a little silly.
Like a post-apocalyptic nightmare in which the class divide is so obviously reflecting what we have now, and you think it's silly?
Well, I thought...
Oh, my God, Rafer.
Did you like the movie?
I loved it.
You're kidding.
I loved it. What's not to love in this
movie?
Wow,
really?
It was great.
So you were just with it? None of this stuff bothered you?
I have this thing that we're all supposed to have when we see a movie. You may have heard of it when you were in your film studies classes in college. It's called suspension of disbelief. Okay?
I have heard of that. That rings a bell.
And you know what? If Justin Timberlake is going to be this hot guy who's going to run around a lot and hold on, where am I going with this? Oh, sorry. I totally enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought the metaphor was fun. You know, the
metaphor is very fun.
The time for money, the money for time. I thought that was great. And I love the little guy rising up and trying to take back what's his.
I love
that. And I love Justin Timberlake, and I love Amanda Seyfried. This wasn't the best version of
her.
Really?
No.
She's been better in other movies.
Yeah.
I love her. I loved her in Mean Girls. I loved her in Big Love, the TV show.
Uh-huh.
I kind of love her in everything.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
This isn't the, you know, worst version of her. I did see Dear John, but
yes. Right.
But she's really fun to watch.
Yeah, she's very, very appealing. I feel that, I mean, so far she's kind of, you know, gotten a niche for herself playing this kind of, you know, blue-eyed blonde sort of, you know, I don't know what she is, kind of this sort of dazzling white flower, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here she's got this kind of red bob and, you know, sort of, you know, punky mascara because she's the rebellious rich girl. I didn't feel like that suited her quite so well. She seemed more, I felt like this role could have been played by any generic girl with trendy hair and too much makeup. I felt that she was a little bit squandered in it myself.
Yeah, she could have been more well written. That being said, I was fine with most of the movie.
I'll be darned.
Not just fine. I was super fine with it. I was loving
really?
it.
So
I was loving it. I you know how some reviewers write a movie that will make you stand up and cheer. The people behind me were so mad. I was standing up and cheering. I was literally, yeah, that was me.
I heard, so there is one semi-effective scene where Justin Timberlake, well, he does this a couple times, but there's one good scene where Justin Timberlake dispatches a room full of thugs. And that scene had some punch and some kind of some dynamics to it that I thought was good. And the guys behind me were like, yeah! they really liked it. They started clapping. Yeah, man! Go JT! And there are a few scenes, but I mean, it also, I just felt like a lot of the movie had a lot of, I don't know, car chases in what looked like, you know, old Chevys and he drives them through these barriers that just break apart like balsa wood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We already heard that.
I'm
but
just
you know
saying,
what?
It just seemed, and I just felt like, come on, it's, I don't know. I felt like they could have done a little better and thought a little harder about all this. That's all.
Maybe you're expecting your dates to be a little bit different than I'm expecting my dates to
Maybe
be.
Maybe so.
Because I thought this was a great movie date.
A great movie date.
I thought it was a great movie date.
I thought it was a pretty mediocre movie date. Mm. I don't think I'd be complaining or apologizing necessarily after the date, but I think I'd be feeling a little lukewarm on the whole thing.
Oh, well, maybe you should just spend your next date on Saturday sitting on the couch watching Waterworld for 6 hours.
I just might do that.